Let's read together Job chapters 23 and 24. In these two chapters, we have Job's response to the third speech of Eliphaz. Let's begin by reading the first 12 verses of Job 23. Then Job answered and said, "Even today my complaint is bitter. My hand is listless because of my groaning. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come to his seat. I would present my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would know the words which he would answer me and understand what he would say to me. Would he contend with me in his great power? No, but he would take note of me. There the upright could reason with him, and I would be delivered forever from my judge. Look, I go forward, but he is not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. When he works on the left hand, I cannot behold him. When he turns to the right hand, I cannot see him. But he knows the way I take. When he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. My foot has held fast to his steps. I have kept his way and not turned aside. I have not departed from the commandment of his lips. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my necessary food." Let's begin our study of these chapters in Job. Job chapters 23 and 24 with some background notes. Job chapter 23, verse 10. Is a well-known verse in the Bible, but usually pulled out of context and wrongly interpreted. When he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. This verse is normally interpreted to mean that Job was saying that God was like an assayer or refiner heating the crucible of Job's sufferings so that the dross in Job's life would be burned off and Job would come forth as refined gold. Now that concept is certainly taught in Scripture, but not here in the context of Job chapter 23. I'm reading from 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. "You have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ." From 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. So the Bible does teach that God tests our faith, and the testing process is like the refining of gold. But that is not the thought in Job chapter 23, verse 10. "When he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold." In the context of Job 23, Job was convinced that he already was pure gold, with no sinful dross to be burned away, as his counselors were suggesting. And the testing process, said Job, would prove that he was gold. Now, I don't think any of us here would dare to take the position that Job takes here. We know that when we are tested, there is sinful dross to be purged away. Hardly can we make a claim of innocence as Job did here in Job chapter 23, as well as in other chapters of Job that we've already studied. And we will see that Job continues to make the claim of innocence, not only in this chapter, but in the chapters ahead as well. And Job's counselors know that Job is not backing down from his claim of innocence. Look over at Job 33, verses 8 and 9. Here Elihu, Job's fourth counselor, is speaking to Job. Verse 8, "Surely you have spoken in my hearing, and I have heard the sound of your words, saying," and now Elihu quotes Job and Job's claim of innocence. Verse 9, "I am pure without transgression. I am innocent, and there is no iniquity in me." The claim of Job as to his innocence. From Job chapter 33, verses 8 and 9. Well, that brings us to our doctrinal points for these chapters in Job. Doctrinal point number one, in his third response to Eliphaz, Job requests God's presence to prove his innocence. In his third response to Eliphaz, Job requests God's presence to prove his innocence. We see in verses 1 through 7 of chapter 23 that Job longs to present his case directly to the Lord. Now, Job does admit in verse 2 that his complaint is somewhat rebellious, but he is convinced that if the Lord would listen to his arguments, Job would be found to be innocent. Even though Job cannot find God, no matter what direction he looked, verses 8 and 9, Job knows that God is there. And after all the testing is over, The Lord will see that Job has not departed from the ways and the words of the Lord, but he is like pure gold. Verses 10 through 12. In verses 13 through 17, we see that Job is awed and even fearful when he thinks about how sovereign God is. Let's read these verses. But he is unique, and who can make him change? And whatever his soul desires, that he does. For he performs what is appointed for me, and many such things are with him. Therefore I am terrified at his presence. When I consider this, I am afraid of him. For God made my heart weak, and the Almighty terrifies me, because I was not cut off from the presence of darkness, and he did not hide deep darkness from my face. Job knows that his case is completely in the hands of God, but he doesn't know what God's full intentions are in his dealings with Job. But in spite of this darkness as to God's intentions, Job is determined not to be silenced concerning his case. In his third response to Eliphaz, Job requests God's presence to prove his innocence. Doctrinal point number two. In his third response to Eliphaz, Job questions why God delays his judgment. In his third response to Eliphaz, Job questions why God delays his judgment. Chapter 24. Let's read the first 17 verses. Since times are not hidden from the Almighty, why do those who know him see not his days? Some remove landmarks. They seize flocks violently and feed on them. They drive away the donkey of the fatherless. They take the widow's ox as a pledge. They push the needy off the road. All the poor of the land are forced to hide. Indeed, like wild donkeys in the desert, they go out to their work, searching for food. The wilderness yields food for them and for their children. They gather their fodder in the field and glean in the vineyard of the wicked. They spend the night naked without clothing and have no covering in the cold. They are wet with the showers of the mountains and huddle around the rock for want of shelter. Some snatch the fatherless from the breast and take a pledge from the poor. They cause the poor to go naked without clothing, and they take away the sheaves from the hungry. They press out oil within their walls and tread wine presses, yet suffer thirst. The dying groan in the city, and the souls of the wounded cry out, yet God does not charge them with wrong. There are those who rebel against the light. They do not know its ways nor abide in its paths. The murderer rises with the light. He kills the poor and needy, and in the night he is like a thief. The eye of the adulterer waits for the twilight, saying, no eye will see me, and he disguises his face. In the dark they break into houses, which they mark for themselves in the daytime. They do not know the light, for the morning is the same to them as a shadow of death. If someone recognizes them, they are in the terrors of the shadow of death. In these verses, Job lists a number of sins of the wicked and questions why God allows these evildoers to go unpunished. Now, Job is not the last person to have these same questions. In fact, maybe you've questioned God along these same lines. How can God allow such wickedness and evil to go unpunished? And if there is judgment, why does God delay his judgment? Remember, Job did not have the light of the New Testament. Now, in the first reading of verses 18 through 25 of Job 24, it seems that Job is contradicting himself, because in these verses, he seems to be saying that God does punish the wicked. Let's read these verses. They should be swift on the face of the waters. Their portion should be cursed in the earth, so that no one would turn into the way of their vineyards. As drought and heat consume the snow waters, so the grave consumes those who have sinned. The womb should forget him. The worm should feed sweetly on him. He should be remembered no more, and wickedness should be broken like a tree. For he preys on the barren who do not bear, and does no good for the widow. But God draws the mighty away with his power. He rises up, but no man is sure of life. He gives them security, and they rely on it. Yet his eyes are on their ways. They are exalted for a little while, then they are gone. They are brought low. They are taken out of the way like all others. They dry out like the heads of grain. Now, if it is not so, who will prove me a liar and make my speech worth nothing? So is Job contradicting himself in these verses, where he seems to be saying God does judge the wicked, but in the first 17 verses, He's asking, why is God delaying his judgment? Is Job contradicting himself? No. Job is convinced that the wicked will be judged in death, if not in life. Verse 18. Let me read verse 18 from another translation. Job chapter 24, verse 18. But how quickly they disappear from the face of the earth. Everything they own is cursed. The grave or Sheol will consume the wicked. Verse 19. As drought and heat consume the snow waters, so the grave consumes those who have sinned. And the wicked will be remembered no more. The beginning of verse 20. The womb should forget him. The worm should feed sweetly on him. He should be remembered no more. And the wicked will be broken like a tree. The end of verse 20. And wickedness should be broken like a tree. Again, the answer as to why is given in verse 21. For he preys on the barren who do not bear, and does no good for the widow. The wicked in high places are only exalted for a short time, but then God takes them away. Verses 22 through 24. But God draws the mighty away with his power. He rises up, but no man is sure of life. He gives them security, and they rely on it. Yet his eyes are on their ways. They are exalted for a little while, then they are gone. They are brought low. They are taken out of the way like all others. They dry out like the heads of grain. Job is convinced that this is the right theological viewpoint. Verse 25. Now if it is not so, who will prove me a liar and make my speech worth nothing? So Job is convinced that this is the right view concerning God's sure judgment of the wicked. But still, Job is not completely satisfied with God's timetable of judging the wicked. In his third response to Eliphaz, Job questions why God delays his judgment. And that brings us then to our practical application for these two chapters in Job, Job chapters 23 and 24. Delight yourself in the doctrine of the sovereignty of God. Delight yourself in the doctrine of the sovereignty of God. The doctrine of the sovereignty of God is that God is in total control of everything. As Ephesians chapter 1, verse 11 says, God works all things after the counsel of his will. There is not a single maverick molecule in the universe, as we've said so often. Now, how does that doctrine strike you? Do you delight in it or dread it? We saw at the end of Job chapter 23 that when Job considered this truth, that God was sovereign, Job was not only awed, but even fearful, because he didn't know God's full intentions concerning his suffering. Well, praise the Lord, we have more revelation of God's intentions than Job had. We have the truth of Romans 8:28, which says that for the believer, all things work together for good. So Ephesians 1:11 says God works all things after the counsel of his will, and Romans 8:28 says that God works all things together for good for the believer. It doesn't get any better than that. So delight yourself in the doctrine of the sovereignty of God.